Ahoy, Vachon. Or as the French say, Vachon. This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show on the Voice of Vachon, located on beautiful Vachon Island, rising above the waters of the Puget Sound between Seattle and Tacoma, right here in the state of Washington. That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of intelligent discussion and current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's motto was less is more, more or less, and he always offered more. Our Briefly panel includes Legal Beagle, consensus builder, former Pinkerton guard, and Fulbright scholar, Craig Bellis. Our big board pilot and real life pilot, morning DJ and Texan, Truman O'Brien.
Good morning.
Good morning. Avid defender of justice, mariner, cyclist, and top secret engineer, Kevin Jones.
Vote.
Engineering a win for our democracy today. That is right. And I think we're given a shout out, but not with us today, is historian, professor, party animal, and down under aficionado, Bruce Holman. Bruce. And here I am, part-time Politico, full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreher. In a little bit, we'll have a host of folks zooming in to the show to talk about the local election landscape. We're going to be talking about elections in Washington today. I have a feeling that we will also be talking about the national landscape as well. Just a tiny little bit. I can see I can see Kevin just sort of like
confident a bit.
Yes, right? He's like, yeah.
When can we start?
But we will have some folks from our statewide initiatives, our critical statewide initiatives. We'll have Treasure Mackley, Executive Director of Invest in Washington, to talk about the No on 2109 campaign. We will also have Representative Joe Fitzgibbon zooming in later to talk about No on 2117. And right here with us right now, we have Islander Kristen Hyde from the No on 2124 campaign. And our slate of no's calling in today just to talk a little bit about, you know, how it was to be in the campaign, how, you know, kind of the landscape in Washington is, just a little bit of political insider baseball to distract us today. Felt good. But before we jump in, let's take a moment to check in about what special things we've experienced this past week, other than anxiety, and what we each love most about political season. There's got to be something you love about the political season, and it could just be the Halloween candy. That can be fine. All right. So what is going on with you, Truman?
Oh, well, I'll first say what I loved about the political season was that our show this morning, the Tuesday Morning Scramble with my daughter as a co-host, we did songs about choices. And it's one of our favorite shows because of all the things that apply, and they do apply. For me personally, I had a really an interesting thing happen. I got a couple of little medical things, you know, nothing major. But I went and got acupuncture, the very first time I've ever had acupuncture. You know what? That stuff works. You know, I mean, I know I'm pretty stupid to say that, but really, that stuff works,
ancient
man.
Ancient Chinese been here
They've
for
been doing it
been around for one, not exactly modern day woo-woo.
Yeah, I know, but you know, I'm a little slow. Come on. But anyway, I was really pleased. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
I kind of, with acupuncture, say I don't believe it, I don't understand it,
yep,
but it works.
Yeah, that's
works
where
for
I'm
me.
At.
Mm-hmm.
Works better if you believe.
Yeah. That's,
okay.
That's what you told me originally, but you know what?
Sense.
I don't believe, but it still works.
So It makes sense. All right. And so we've got Kristen over there on the Zoom who has absolutely, I'm sure, had quite a busy week full of comings and goings and lots of happenings. So, Kristen, what's been good for you this week and what do you love about election season?
Hi.
Thanks for having me on, Mayor Dreyer and all. I have been in politics since I was, you know, my first job out of college. So 20, you know, since I was 21 years old. So it's in my blood. I love it, but it's also, as everyone knows, an incredibly anxious, stressful time. And I will say, you know, I have been here, there, and everywhere, but there's always this pre-election kind of paralysis freeze, I think, a couple days before the election. And even today, you know, as we're waiting, you know, reporters are busy, but a lot of the rest of us on campaigns are like, we've done all we can, you know, mm-hmm. and you're just kind of holding your breath.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel today. But I'm excited to be here and to be headed over to hopefully celebrate a lot of wins.
Nice. Are you going to the convention center tonight?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the big Democratic hoedown going to be happening at the convention center tonight. And sort of just a question, how do you handle the boom bust cycle of being in electoral politics? Kind of that big emotional, you know, rise and fall. And how have you worked that out over the years?
Is that a question to me?
Yeah. Or have you?
Yeah, that's the real question.
I don't know. You know, we ride it, right? And there's plenty to do in between elections, you know, and that's when you get down to work and really focus on enacting and implementing, you know, the work, the policy mm-hmm. changes and other work that is not in the policy realm. You know, I do personally do a lot of work on labor, with labor fights and trying to win fair contracts for working people. I work on a lot of public health issues, you know, some issues that usually don't have too much to do with elections, but here we are with an election that actually touches on a lot of issues, including public health, which is the one I've been working on most, this initiative 2124 that concerns long-term care.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Mr. Craig, how have you been this week? What's been great?
I'll tell you, it has been a wonderful weekend, or week, I should say. On Halloween, my wife and I were right here in the studio handing out candy like we normally do on the evening, and seeing all of our friends uptown and going down to Snapdragon and dancing the night away. That was a lot of fun. On Sunday, we went to the Havre and listened to a fabulous concert by Cat Eggleston and Kate McLeod with John Daly also playing along. Fabulous. And finally, it's my favorite, last week we talked about my favorite Halloween memory, my favorite election memory. Was when we, my wife and I, in the morning on our way to work, would go to the library early in the morning to vote. And oftentimes we'd be the first people there, and the one of the women from the League of Women's Voters would come out with a big school bell, and they and outside, and would ring that bell and yell, "Oye, oye, the polls are now open."
Oh, cool.
And we would walk in and they would go, "Oh, the Bellises are here." And it was just a wonderful, wonderful tradition and experience. I mean, I love mail-in voting and early voting and everything, but that particular tradition I really miss.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Kevin, how about you? How's Trix?
Well, there's been a lot of get out the vote activity going on. You know, the postcarding, Vashon the Voters postcarders wrote over 21,000 postcards this cycle. And of course, they have to all be put in the mail in like 10, 15 days or so before the election. So I have been madly shifting my efforts to phone banking and talking to voters, texting to voters. So I always look forward to that last sort of encouragement, right, to participate in the democracy.
Yeah.
But the one other thing that has happened is the King County Strategic Climate Action Plan, they completed their third workshop on last week, and so I had the pleasure to attend that. And we're looking forward to what they come up with in terms of updated climate actions. We're, of course, hoping to see us reflected in the plan. And so we suggested the word fairy should show up more than once in the current plan. So there's just a couple little things,
nice.
You know, that we've been working on. And so we'll continue to hopefully bring awareness to that as things go forward. The last thing about election cycle is that came to mind for me is it's the pivot to legislative cycle.
Mm.
And in other words, let's elect the right people and then take another bite at the apple to make some good changes to help us all out. So I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah. Yeah. This is kind of for Islanders for Fairy Action. This is the warm-up act right now.
Absolutely.
Before we hit the big dance. But have you had a favorite interaction or a memorable interaction with the voter via text, phone, canvas?
You know, there are definitely some memorable ones, some good, some bad. But the no like anything drama. There's no drama like that. Everything's been pretty cool. But it just gives you a chance to look into how people live their lives in different parts of the country, which is always sort of insightful. But talking to like the woman who told the story about her father, they'd always go out to the Statue of Liberty when she lived as a young girl in New York, and they would pick up litter. Mm-hmm. And she would ask, like, why do we do this? You know, why is it the thing about the litter? And her father would say, this is the country that we have come to. This is our forever home. Mm-hmm. And we should be respectful of it and careful that it's still here for others to follow. Some things you will just, you know, never forget in terms of interacting with people.
Yeah.
One quick comment. One of the, I said that one of the, my favorite things was doing our show this morning. One of the songs that we do is called Lady of the Harbor, written by Mr. Joe Jinks and sung by Brother Sons, the trio. And it's about Lady Liberty. Mm-hmm. And it is just really poignant and great. If you haven't heard it, go look it up. You know, it really is really important.
Yeah. It's amazing how much we've lost sight of in the past few years during, you know, the Trump chaos cycle, right?
Yes.
We really have lost sight of, I think, some core things and feet on the ground. And I absolutely have had a great week because Erin is here. My wife Erin is here this week. Yep. Came up for Halloween with her mom. And we also went, one of my favorite things we did this week, outside of Halloween, was we went to the Day of the Dead celebration at VCA, and it was outstanding. The Folklorico Mariachi combo that they brought in, the performers that they brought in, did it was a full hour long show that sort of spanned, you know, sort of older cultural dances, more traditional cultural dances, to you know, sort of a newer interpretation of A Trip Through the Land of the Dead, and it was just a stunning piece of entertainment and culture, and so grateful to VCA for hosting that. And it was a full house, and it was awesome to see that. And I think kind of a favorite election memory I have, in 2000, we went down, I was living in DC, and Emily's List put out this big call for volunteers. And so a bunch of us flew down with Emily's List. They chartered a plane to Broward County, Florida. And so we door knocked in Broward County in 2000 for, you know, for like 2 or 3 days. And then, you know, we did it all the way up until the polls closed. And then, you know, we all go to the airport. It's probably, I don't know, like 100, 200 activists or something. And, you know, they chartered a plane back, and, you know, it's like 8 o'clock at night. We're at the airport and we're waiting for the plane, and we're all just kind of laying around. And obviously somebody had brought some vodka, so that was going around. And, you know, but it's, you know, it's the year 2000. So we are waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and nobody knows, you know, what's going on. So we all get on the plane and we're still waiting, and we get off the plane and everyone's hungover by the time that we got off the plane. And, you know, of course, then sort of days and days of watching television and what was to come. But it was really interesting, you know, to be in Broward County and talking with those voters and you know, be doing that work at that time, was certainly one of my more memorable campaign pieces. And gosh, I hadn't thought about that in a long time, but that waiting.
And, you know, just a shout out to David Domke, Charles Douglas III with Common Power, David's former UW, I think, one of the department, literature, I think he may have run that, but then left that to basically get people to do what you just talked about. Mm. And I wasn't ever sure, like, how many people are really, like, taking up the offer, right, to get on a plane and go and get people to vote. You would be surprised how many people here on the island are probably out there still, you know, this morning, helping get people out to the polls. So very dedicated team democracy supporters here on Vashon for sure.
It is amazing. If you've never door knocked, I think, you know, it's kind of like waiting, you know, being in the service industry. I think something I would encourage everyone who can to do at least once. It's such an incredible way to connect with ourselves and with our democracy. But I see we have Treasure from No on 2109 has joined the Zoom. And Treasure, we're just kind of like going through and giving a little bit of something that happened to us this week that we'd like to share and a favorite moment from the campaign season.
Oh, wonderful. Well, it's so great to be here today. Thanks for having me. Let's see. Favorite moment from the campaign season for this year. I think probably my favorite moment was reading the Seattle Times endorsement of the No on 2109 campaign. And that was a really pivotal moment because, you know, the capital gains tax was well over a decade in the making. And, you know, the Seattle Times had weighed in on it for years and years and years. And to see them reject Initiative 2109 because, you know, the way they wrote it in that editorial endorsement, just focusing on, you know, the need to fund education and childcare and how important this funding is for Washingtonians all across the state. And to talk about how this capital gains tax is one that really only impacts, you know, a very, very small number of wealthy Washingtonians, but the benefits extend to all of us and to every single corner of the state. That was such an impactful moment because it represented so much of the conversations that we had been having with folks all across the state. And to see that in print was really impactful and, you know, was a strong and solid moment. And it's been one of the things that's carried me forward. And, you know, I'm excited for tonight. Mm-hmm. Feeling really good about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, with campaigns, we live on those little bites of energy, you know, when, when what we've been doing is picked up and someone else runs with the ball for a little bit and you're like, yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I've been saying. Yep. We kind of like live on those little power bars of energy throughout the campaign. All right. So today is a significant day and I won't belabor it too much, but of course it is election day. So drop your ballots, vote today. It is 76 days until the inauguration of the 47th president of the United States. And today in history, we have, I chose some icons, revolutionaries, and upstarts. Today in 1912, Woodrow Wilson won a landslide victory. In 1940, Franklin D. Roosevelt was elected to an unprecedented third term as president of the United States. And in 1968, Mr. Tricky Dick Nixon was also elected president. Mm-hmm. So it's what's come before. On November 5th, 1872, that would be 48 years before American women gained the right to vote through the 19th Amendment, pioneering women's rights activist Susan B. Anthony illegally attempted to cast a vote in the presidential election. Anthony was arrested 2 weeks later and was tried and convicted the following year and ordered to pay a $100 fine. So not that long ago, women jailed for trying to vote. All right. And finally, it is Guy Fawkes Day, everyone. Hello. It is the English holiday marking the anniversary of the gunpowder plot when Roman Catholics led by Robert Catesby tried to blow up Parliament, the king and his family this day in 1605.
There's one other event I have to mention. 5 years ago today, yours truly got his pilot's license with the help of our man on the board here, Truman O'Brien, my CFI. Today was the day.
And how long after that was the treetop incident?
That was the next day.
The next day. No.
It was much later.
It was about 2.5 years later.
Was it 2? Oh, gosh. I mean, that feels like forever ago, but it was only a couple of years ago. All right. Well, then we will celebrate that day.
Indeed.
Yeah, we will celebrate that day. All right. So let's get down to some business. Let's talk elections. And today we're going to welcome three guests who have worked day and night for months to protect progressive gains in Washington State. We have Treasurer Mackley, Executive Director of Invest in Washington, which advocates for fair tax policy. We also have Islander Kristen Hyde, who will talk about her work to preserve our state's long-term care fund. And we will also have Representative Joe Fitzgibbon to talk about the No on 2117 campaign, working to preserve our vital Climate Commitment Act. All right, let's jump right in.
Yeah, this is Craig. Treasurer, a little question, actually not a little question, big question, about 2109 talks about taxes on capital gains of $250,000 or more. Can you tell us how you came to work on that particular issue and then give us a brief recap of what's been going on in your campaign season?
Certainly. Well, I joined Invest in Washington 4 years ago. And that had been actually after over a decade of serving on the Washington Budget and Policy Center board. So although I've been in the tax policy space in a working capacity for the last 4 years, I've been in the space for quite some time and had joined Invest in Washington after serving 8 years as a vice president at Planned Parenthood over a 6-state affiliate working on the elections and advocacy work. And I came to the Initiative 2109 campaign because Invest in Washington, you know, our focus was to get the capital gains tax passed. This had been a piece of legislation that had been over a decade in the making and, you know, had many, many, many conversations. We were able to pass that in 2021. We then stewarded it through the legal challenges that were brought by the opposition that went all the way up to the state Supreme Court, where we won those legal challenges. And then they brought an initiative. They actually brought an initiative to the people a couple of years ago, but they closed that campaign down pretty swiftly. And then they came back with this initiative to the people. And so my work at Invest in Washington was to help bring and build our campaign structure together so that we could not only defend the capital gains tax, but also make sure that we were, you know, funding education and childcare and taking this, you know, forward in the right direction, because we knew that Washingtonians did not want to give a tax cut to the very, very wealthy, especially when it comes at the expense of our kids, our families, and our schools. And so that's a little bit about how I got to this space. We have built a really broad coalition of folks. We have about 150 organizations that have come together on the No on Initiative 2109 campaign. A lot of those organizations have been in this fight for that last decade as we've been working together. So a lot of these organizations have been in the trenches and having conversations around the capital gains tax and how we can build a more fair and equitable tax code here in Washington for decades. And I anticipate that we'll continue to work together because we've still got some more work to do to make sure our tax code is fair and just and works for all of us.
Let me follow up just mm-hmm. so people understand. There's many, many people who haven't been steeped in this the way you have for years and years. And whenever they hear, oh, this is an opportunity to lower our taxes, you know, there's a sort of a knee-jerk mm-hmm. reaction to that. But we're talking about people who have $250,000 or more, not in income, but in capital gains. Is that correct? That's what the tax is on. Do you have any idea what kind of percentage of the population that represents?
That's a great question. And you're right. It's this is a 7% tax on the profits of the sale of stocks and bonds over $250,000. So that means this is the very, very, very wealthiest Washingtonians. In fact, only 4,000 Washingtonians ended up paying this tax in 2023, and it represents less than 0.02% of Washingtonians. So it's a tax on the very, very, very wealthy, but it generates over $2.2 billion over the next 5 years that will go to education, early learning, childcare, and school construction.
Can we say very wealthy?
Yes. Yeah. Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is, I find that absolutely fascinating. And it really strikes me that it could actually become an initiative, you know, really, that you would get that many people.
Well, if you have enough money.
I guess, get enough people to get signatures, I suppose. So, Kristen, you know, I know how Kevin got involved in politics here on the island, but I'm curious, how did you get involved in the NOAA Initiative 2124 campaign, and how has the campaign gone?
Hi, yeah. You know, like Treasure said about the wealth tax, the capital gains tax, the long-term care program in Washington has been over a decade in making, possibly even close to two. Honestly, it's been a long time coming with hundreds and hundreds of stakeholders who have been trying to forge a path to deal with the growing crisis that we are experiencing and will only get worse as, I don't know if this term the gray tsunami, but you know, we're aging as a population, and we are going to have more and more need for long-term care and help paying for it. So the program's been a long time in the making, and it was delayed in its implementation. It passed legislature in 2019, and after some delays in implementation, it finally launched last summer in 2023. But yeah, back in 2021, I came on board to help what became a coalition of folks who had been involved in the development of the program to help raise public awareness around long-term care and what this resource is going to be for folks and how it will help address the crisis. And when I say crisis, you know, anyone who experiences the need for long-term care or has a loved one who experienced it, that itself is a crisis, you know, for the family, you know, emotionally, physically, and in many ways, financially, for most people, it ends up being a huge crisis. So, you know, that crisis is growing. This program finally got off the ground. I got involved by offering I do communications and media work to help on this public education campaign to help folks understand what it's called. WA Cares. It's the Washington Long-Term Care Benefit. What is it? How does it work? You know, you pay in while you're working, and then you have lifetime access to a benefit that grows indexed to inflation. The benefit can be used to pay for a home care aid, home modifications like a ramp, grab bars, a walk-in shower, things that can support folks who want to get care at home, which is most of us. It can be used for facilities as well, like nursing homes, but most care is actually happening at home. Most people want care at home, and this benefit goes a long ways when you get home care. So we got the program launched, like I said, last summer. People have been paying in for over a year now, and the first benefits will become available in 2026, which is coming right up. And then this ballot initiative, you know, came up like the others, really, sponsored by a MAGA mega millionaire hedge fund manager who doesn't have financial constraints, you know, think about how to pay for long-term care or childcare, and some other pretty extremist right-wing, you know, backers. Now, they, you know, to take this, this initiative, along with the others, are deceptive and have a slogan of vote yes, pay less. When, as Treasurer just said, you know, a handful of people pay the capital gains tax, and the vast majority, I mean, 90%+ of us will need this benefit, the long-term care benefit. A handful of very wealthy people may not need it. They can pay out of pocket privately. They can pay for long-term care insurance, which only 3% of people have because of how expensive it is and because it rejects people with pre-existing conditions. So we're really optimistic. We know that Washington voters are savvy. This isn't the first time they've had misleading, deceptive ballot initiatives to vote on. And they do their homework and they dig in and get the facts. And so we're really hopeful that they will reject this attempt to take away long-term care benefits from 4 million Washingtonians who are paying in right now and will need those benefits, whether you're the person who needs the care or you're caring for a loved one. So I like to say it's going to benefit all of us.
So, Kristen Struman again. Full disclosure, I'm the former president of Vashon Community Care, of the board of Vashon Community Care, so I'm
wonderful,
highly invested in this long-term care. two questions. One, it sounds, you know, I'm not really familiar with the Washington Cares initiative, or not the initiative, but the act. And so it sounds like it's like Social Security in that you're taxed, everyone is taxed as by their employers and is paid into a fund. And then, so some folks are going to be able to get use of it and some folks aren't, just like Social Security. And it'll fund ahead of when you need it, as I understand it, correct?
Right. Yeah. You know, like Social Security, like any insurance program, mm-hmm. we pay in premiums, hoping we never have to make a claim.
Yeah.
With auto insurance, home insurance, and most people actually don't make very frequent claims on those programs, but they're mandatory. At least in Washington State, we must carry auto insurance. Mm-hmm. If you have a home mortgage, you're carrying home insurance, and you pay in. And the benefit is there should you need it.
And
with Social Security, I mean, everyone who pays in does get it. Now, with this benefit, long-term care insurance through the state, you would only receive the benefit if you need it. So if I'm, you know, one of the very, very few people in this world who never needs long-term care, I won't be able to use my benefit. But most other people will. And perhaps my spouse, sister, or other relative is the one needing care.
Sure.
They can actually use that benefit to get, you know, maybe I'm caring for them. They can use that benefit to get a home care aide so that I have respite care. I can get a break myself or continue working even. So yeah, that's how it works. And this attempt was an attempt to get rid of it, get rid of just like attempts to privatize Social Security. You know, it's not a good idea, and hopefully Washingtonians will reject it.
Thank you.
Hey, Kirsten, I had a quick jump in. I did, first of all, shout out to Defend Washington, who's organizing, opposition to all four of these initiatives. Through that outreach, I had a chance to do some text banking, and one of them that we focused on was 2124. And you learn along the way, right, when you start to interact with voters and answer their questions. Then there was some quibbling, right, about the details of the law. I understand that the ability now to export the benefit out of state addressed, you know, some of the concerns that people had. But the other thing that was more overriding than that was one of the organizers said, well, here's the deal. If this initiative passes, we don't have a chance to go back and address some of the areas of this healthcare system that we would like to improve over time. You know, there's people are raising, you know, very valid, you know, questions about exactly what does the program look like. Not to say that it's good or bad, but they're just like, how does this work and how do I benefit and exactly what's my involvement in it? And the person said that we always have the chance, if we keep it, to evolve and improve it over time. And so for me, that was really compelling reason
to
go against this.
You cancel it, you're never going to get it back.
Yeah, and the years and years that you talked about to get to this point, you know, that's just wiping progress right off the mat.
Yep. That's right. Yep. I've never liked that phrase, throw the baby out with the bathwater, but that's pretty much what we would do if this initiative passes and destroys the program, which all the experts say it will. There we go, reversing, you know, all the progress that we've made. And we are the first in the nation. And so what happens here has significant implications for the rest of the country. 9 other states, maybe 15 other states, including California and New York and, you know, many places are going to enact similar programs. So, yeah, exactly. The program has been strengthened and it can continue. In fact, lawmakers like our Representative Nicole Macri will take the lead on implementing additional improvements and ways to strengthen this program should we be able to keep it.
Yeah. And it really gives Washington a chance to lead sort of as we are doing with the Climate Commitment Act. And we have Representative Fitzgibbon, who has zoomed in to join us. And I know everyone has such busy campaign days today, but Representative Fitzgibbon, we are just kind of doing a round robin here. We're almost to the post game show, right? Mostly we just want to hear, you know, how's it going? Do you have a favorite campaign moment from the season? What are you thinking about today? This is kind of our little insider baseball, what's it like to be in the campaign? So tell us a little bit about your role in 2117 and the No on 2117 campaign and maybe some favorite moments from the campaign.
Yeah, thank you. So my role in the Climate Commitment Act goes back at least as far as 2021, when we worked in the legislature to enact our state's cap on greenhouse gas emissions, which lowers over time until we get to a safe level. But I've been working on that policy for a decade prior to 2021. And then this year, when Initiative 2117 came before the voters, I started working with the No on 2117 campaign as the political director. And so I've been really honored to play a role in making sure that that we communicated to Washingtonians the harms of Initiative 2117 and the way in which, like all the initiatives on the ballot, 2117 would take us backwards and would eliminate things that Washingtonians have told us in the legislature and have told us that they care about. In the case of 2117, the harms that would inflict on our state most prominently exist in the transportation space, by defunding our ferry construction progress, but also taking us backwards on our efforts to prevent wildfires, to improve air quality, to fight hunger in our state, to recover salmon habitat. It's been a really amazing campaign to be a part of, in part because the coalition has been so broad. We've seen, everybody from some of the biggest businesses in our state, Amazon and Microsoft, to some of the most, progressive community organizations in our state, labor organizations, tribal nations. A majority of Washington tribes are fighting this initiative. I will say that the moments that have stuck with me from this campaign have been when we've been really able to focus attention on what some of those harms might be. So we had a press conference in Georgetown to talk about the air quality harms of this initiative. Georgetown is one of the communities that's most impacted by air pollution disparities, in part because of all of the highway infrastructure, the port infrastructure near that community that the Climate Commitment Act is investing in reducing air pollution harms from trucking and from aviation. Of course, they're near Boeing Field, as well as a press conference on the downtown Seattle waterfront, which I think Amy was a part of, to talk about the harms to our ferry system that, we're really banking on resources from big polluters to invest in the replacement of our aging ferry system to make sure that we have more reliable transportation for island communities like Vashon and Maury Islands. I think the most meaningful and I think the most recent one that I'll end with was we had an event in the Central District of Seattle talking about safe routes to school, talking about projects that the Climate Commitment Act has funded to make it easier and safer for kids to walk and bike to school safely. Those are all investments that we know Washingtonians care about, and they're all investments that would be really jeopardized if Initiative 2117 were to pass. And so I think every opportunity we've had to crystallize what the harms of this initiative might be, also remind Washingtonians what some of the progress that we're making is, the progress that we're making as we work to replace our ferry system, progress we're making as we work to reduce the risk of wildfire, to reduce air quality harms, and to make it easier and safer for particularly kids to walk and bike, but also for all Washingtonians to walk and bike safely. So every chance that we've had to make sure Washingtonians are aware of what those harms might be, what those impacts might be, has really mattered.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Hey Joe, good to see you. I'm glad you're back on the Voice of Vashon with us here. Hey, I was just reading off my No on 2117 wallet card that it's awesome that you hit all those key points, but I wanted to point out one other we have here is expanding electric vehicle charging networks. And I was just mentioning at the top of the show that I've been with the King County Strategic Climate Action Planning, where there's a fellow, Ross Freeman, I believe his name is, who is in charge of grant monies for electric charging, and they're actively pursuing more opportunities here on Vashon. So my understanding is that the Climate Commitment Act, if it goes away, could jeopardize some of that progress as well.
Yeah, I mean, to be blunt, we wouldn't have a revenue stream to pay for new electric vehicle charging investments without the Climate Commitment Act. Mm-hmm. So if Initiative 2117 were to pass, we would just not see the growth in electric vehicle charging stations that we are going to need in order to enable people to get around in electric vehicles and to, you know, reduce the harms of both climate pollution and air quality pollution that that gasoline and diesel vehicles cause. So we're already seeing, and we're going to continue to see, if this initiative fails, a really big growth in the ability of Washingtonians to get around with electric vehicles. There's really not a way the state could pay for that in the absence of charging big polluters for the impacts of their pollution, which is what the Climate Commitment Act does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could you follow up on that a little bit, Joe? I don't understand the cap and invest aspects of the climate commitment. How is that funded?
Yeah, so what the Climate Commitment Act does is it requires the 100 largest polluters in Washington state to acquire allowances from the state of Washington, from the Department of Ecology, to mitigate for the harms that that pollution causes to Washington state. We're one of only two states in the country that have an economy-wide program of this nature, us in California. And by requiring those large polluters like oil refiners and electric utilities to basically pay Washingtonians for the harm that their pollution causes, we also generate a lot of revenue, which we invest in making our state a cleaner and better place. So things like electric vehicle charging, like free transit for Washingtonians under the age of 18, for investments in growing and improving transit and walking and biking and ferries and improving the quality of our air quality monitoring, so we actually know where air quality is impacted in our state and where we have the most ground to make up to ensure Washingtonians are safe from dangerous air, investing in wildfire prevention. So where all those resources come from is from the 100 largest polluters in the state and requiring them to be accountable for the harm that their pollution causes to Washingtonians. They have to go to a quarterly auction that's administered by the Department of Ecology and buy allowances to account for their pollution. And with those resources, we invest in making Washington a better place.
Okay, thank you. That makes it much more clear.
Yeah, it's really a huge scope of legislation that sort of gets us ready for the future, right? It's sort of that comprehensive thinking about our climate and about our world that we would love to see on, you know, multiple state level, a national level, a global level, Washington really, really, truly leading in that comprehensive planning for the future. Truman.
So I have a question for each one of you, and that is, how are you feeling about your program? Are you feeling that you're having success? Do you think we're going to have get them passed? Are you going to oppose? How do you feel? Kristen, let's start with you.
We're feeling really optimistic. You're talking about the initiative. We're feeling Correct. Very optimistic that voters will recognize that Initiative 2124 is a wolf in sheep's clothing, and they will reject it and protect long-term care benefits that are going to help, you know, millions, literally 4 million people are already enrolled, and it's going to help, you know, near retirees, part-time workers, people as they age, people who experience debilitating injuries or illness. And it's especially going to help, you know, sandwich generation, working people. You know, Treasure and I talk about this, you know, who usually steps out of their job to care for family? It's usually women, working women who are squeezed, you know, really taking care of children and now parents or in-laws as well. So we're really hopeful that that voters are rejecting 2124 and will protect our long-term care benefits for the future. And I think in 10 years, if we're able to you know, continue to strengthen this program, we won't have to, you know, have such an effort to defend it. People will embrace it, just like they're embracing a lot of social safety nets. They'll be thrilled to that lifeline was there for them. So
that's,
yeah. Good. Treasure, how about you?
We are feeling very optimistic and really good as well as we are, you know, coming into Election Day. One of the things that we've heard and we've seen from voters across the state is that, you know, they really understand that our tax code here in Washington State has been upside down, where low and middle income folks have been paying far more of their share than the rest of, you know, than the wealthy for decades. And we also see that Washingtonians really strongly believe in funding education and childcare. And, you know, what Kristen was just saying, you know, there's a particular impact that is, you know, impacting women and families. You know, I'll just speak from my own experience. You know, I'm a mom. I have a 9-year-old. And when my kiddo was starting kindergarten, I got an email that he was finally accepted into a newborn program at one of the childcare places that we had put our name on the list. Wow. That's not an unusual experience, right? We don't have enough childcare spots in our state. And, you know, so it had taken 5 years. Luckily, I'd been able to find something else since then. But 5 years I'd been on this waiting list. At the same time that I was paying for childcare for my son, my dad has dementia. He passed away with dementia, and I had to figure out how to pay for the care that he needed. So was really that sandwich generation. My kiddo also has asthma. So, you know, the investments in the Climate Commitment Act and how we're making our air and our environments cleaner and healthier, all of these things impact just my immediate family. And the thing about that is that we see this across the state. As we've been talking to folks all across the state, everyone's seeing and drawing these connections. And I'm feeling really optimistic because, as Kristen said earlier, we know that Washingtonians are really savvy, and we're savvy at the ballot initiative process. And I think that Washingtonians are going to see through this attempt by, you know, a very small handful of wealthy folks who are trying to give themselves a big tax cut at the expense of all of us. So I'm feeling strong and solid that we're going to reject Initiative 2109 and that we'll reject all four of these initiatives on our ballot.
You know, something that you said really struck a chord with me, and Kevin was talking about door knocking, and Amy, you were talking about door knocking. You know, sharing these personal stories of how this impacts you individually certainly brings that home to everyone. And even though this may not affect me, I'm old and retired, it gives me a great empathy for you and for those other folks who may be in that situation. So thank you for doing all the work that you're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I just want to, we're getting to time here, and I want to close out with a round robin. And Representative Fitzgibbon, give us, a little bit of what we're looking at today, what we're thinking about 2117 as we go to close the polls today. But then what I'd love to hear from each of you is, what race are you looking at nationally? Outside of the big shebang, right? For me, I'm really interested in the Texas Senate race, right? Like, where am I going to put my energy outside of those big national polls? I'm really, really curious about that one. So, Rep. Fitzgibbon, tell us how you feel about 2117 today, and then we'll round robin real quick, lightning round, to see what national race are you looking at.
Thanks. I'll try to be quick. You know, I'm very hopeful and optimistic about 2117. I think Washingtonians have been really responsive to hearing about what the harms of this initiative are. And I think Washingtonians really care about action on climate change, not just climate change in the big picture, but also how climate change is impacting us today, including wildfires. In some ways, I'm almost grateful that we had this initiative fight, as much as I want to be sure that this initiative doesn't pass. I think it's really given Washingtonians a chance to understand and learn more about the progress that we're making as a state. You know, I'm on the ballot too this election, and I've had folks reach out to me and say, why are you so proud of Washington's climate progress? What is it that you think? And I'm so excited for the opportunity to say that we have the best climate change laws in the country, and that we as voters have the opportunity to protect those laws by rejecting Initiative 2117 and Initiative 2066. So in a way, it's been kind of a mixed blessing to have this opportunity to talk to so many Washingtonians about the progress that we're making on long-term care, on childcare, on K-12 and higher education, on climate change. While of course we want to be sure that these important programs and these important decisions continue, I think Washingtonians know more today than they did a year ago about the great work that our state is doing together. Mm-hmm. Nationally, I guess the Montana Senate race is really important. It's for Senator John Tester, who's been serving Montanans for I think like 18 years now, has an incredible record of accomplishment. I am really hoping to see that he returns to his office as a U.S. senator, because it's going to make a really big difference for our ability to keep moving forward as a country.
Absolutely. Keeping that big chamber. All right. Kristen, you have a national race that you're looking at tonight?
I think I'm with you, Amy. I mean, Texas all red and, you know, with John Tester, super important. And I certainly hope that Bob Casey can hold on in Pennsylvania. And by the way, he's been a real leader on long-term care federally. So hoping on that. Yeah.
Do we think with these Senate races, are we going to see sort of a split like, you know, I'm going to go Democrat at the top and throw a monkey wrench into the Senate race, right? Like splitting Democrat Republican, or do we think that big tailwinds from the top will take our Democratic senators where they need to go? Mm. Who knows?
Yeah, I was going to say that. That brings back a big response. I thought it would.
Yeah. There's a lot of anecdotal, which doesn't really mean anything. You know, these interviews. Yeah. I voted for Trump, but I didn't vote for anybody down. You know.
Yeah.
Down ballot. I voted for Harris, but I didn't vote for anybody down ballot. So I think it's hard to say. Although generally, I think that the top of the ticket will carry. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence from people who voted for Trump the last two times and said, this time I'm voting Democrat all the way down the ballot. Hmm.
So, Amy, I've been texting and calling voters into Pennsylvania, and particularly Senator Casey's come up a couple of times. One person said they're going to split their ticket.
Yeah.
Everybody else is either, you know, I'm all Democrat, all the way blue, the whole ballot. And, of course, then there's the MAGA, and, you know, we don't really engage with folks who come back with that response.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure they're pretty solid on the Republican side. So, I haven't seen a lot of evidence of people that I've talked to who said they're planning to split their ballot.
We're in our camps. All right, Treasure, what national race are you looking at today?
Oh, you're muted. Sorry.
I am. I got so excited. I have been keeping an eye on all of these statewide initiatives across the country on abortion. You know, seeing the impact of the Dobbs decision and the impact that that's had all across the country. You know, I think we've seen this has been a, you know, there's been so many folks who have been motivated to get involved in politics in a way that we haven't seen before. And we have, I think there's 10 states that have abortion initiatives on the ballot this November. So I'm really keeping a close eye on those. I love, you know, love the initiatives here in Washington, love to look at them across the state and to see how they interplay not only with the, you know, turnout, but also how they interplay with the candidates that are on the ballot as well. So that's what I'm going to be watching tonight.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And outside, another quick lightning round for the group. Outside of Pennsylvania, what is your swing state to watch in the presidential election, Kevin?
That's a good question. I definitely think Ohio as well. But I can also share I've been doing some looking. You hear it's a close race. Like people are saying unprecedented close race. Here's a data point. On the U.S. House, we need to flip 4 seats to have a Democratic majority. It turns out that there are 6 seats that will definitely flip. 3 from red to blue, 3 from blue to red. I mean, it's that close. Mm-hmm. And then of the remaining, it's like, okay, how many seats are likely to flip based on other people rating them? Just enough to give us a 1-seat majority. I mean, seriously, just enough. Now, the ones that are less likely to flip, but they're not solid, right? They're kind of in the margin they could. 26 of them, guess how they're split? 13-13. I'm not kidding. Every time I look, it's like, where's our edge? It's like, it is solidly matched. So that means not only our listeners, the people you know, we need to get out and vote. The people you know out of Washington State, give them a call. Just make sure that they're getting that ballot in. So close this time. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. Representative Fitzgibbon, outside of Pennsylvania, is there a state that you think you're going to have your eye on, a swing state?
I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to say two. One is Arizona, which I just feel... you know, it may be partly just because it's a Western state. It's a big state. It's a state that's seen so much change from being a historically incredibly Republican state to, you know, one of the biggest swing states in the country. I'm holding out hope that Arizona will do what they did 4 years ago and vote blue. I think the other state that I'm really optimistic about is North Carolina. I think we've seen really big change in North Carolina and a lot of enthusiasm among voters of color, among a lot of voters who maybe historically voted more Republican, including a lot of white voters who are, well, I won't ascribe why, but you know, who I think are motivated to vote for Vice President Harris this year. So I'm going to be very excited to watch North Carolina tonight.
Mm-hmm. Craig, do you have a state?
I have two, again, two states that are oftentimes mistaken for one another, Ohio and Iowa, even though they're many miles apart. Having lived in Ohio for many years, Sherrod Brown's against Marino. That's a race that I'm watching, and in Iowa after that very fascinating poll that was done in Iowa, giving the Democrats the lead. But I think that Harris will carry the day, and I think the deciding factors across the board will be women's rights, women's health rights, decency. And enthusiasm. Mm.
Oh. The Mo. They got the Mo. All right, Treasurer, what state are you watching?
You know, I grew up in Utah, and so I am watching those western states as well, both Arizona and Nevada. And I will say that, you know, many folks on my family tend to be on the other side of the aisle than I am. But many of them are splitting their tickets. And one of the reasons is because of, you know, the attacks on women's health, you know, as well as just seeing the, you said earlier, the decency, the just really wanting to get to a place of being able to have a conversation, you know, connection with their communities and be able to have people be respected and treated as people. Because at the end of the day,
yeah,
that's all we got.
We all need that.
Truman, are you watching any particular state?
Well, like Treasurer, I have friends and family, and being from Montana, that are very much on the other side. And I'm finding John Tester to be, I know many John Testers from Montana, and he's just a salt of the earth guy, just, you know, down to earth, straight shooter. And I really, really hope to see him succeed. But
all right. Well, I'm going to say my Hail Mary is going to be Georgia. I'm gonna be looking out for Georgia, and I think I don't say so goes Georgia, so goes the country. But obviously, if we can flip Georgia, I'm gonna call it for Vice President Harris. But I'm also gonna stick with Mr. Carville and say it is the economy, right? That was his big thing with Clinton back in the day, and that's kind of where I'm going to be wondering about what folks are saying, why they voted, when we get those exit polls. All right, we're not done with the election yet, because next week, Kevin, tell us what is going to happen.
Hey, next week on Brown Briefly, it's the post-election show, so come on down and hear Tina Shattuck, who is the founder and executive director of Women Hold the Key, and our friend Lennon Bronsema from Washington Conservation Action. I will just throw in one last thing, Representative Fitzgibbon. I looked at the changes in environment and climate policy since the Senate changed from red to blue in 2017 with Monica Dingra. It is shockingly and surprisingly and awesomely great. In supporting the legislature, you, until you do that job, you do not know how many bills and how many issues come to a legislator's desk. Mm-hmm. And Joe Fitzgibbon, thank you for being the champion for making all that progress happen in, under your leadership. So thank you so much for being here, and great to hear from everybody else. Thanks for letting me throw in a pitch for people,
Kevin.
I really appreciate, and the work you're doing.
Absolutely. It's our government of the people. Truly, we are the government. All right. Really want to thank everyone for giving your time today and zooming in. Representative Fitzgibbon, Treasurer Mackley from IWN, Invest in Washington, and also Kristen Hyde from No on 2124. On behalf of our absent Bruce, Mr. Truman, Craig, Kevin, Treasurer, Representative Fitzgibbon, Kristen, Kevin, and myself. and the rest of the vaguely nauseous progressives everywhere else in the country today.
Here.
I am Amy. I'm wishing you a very fond farewell for the week. Please come back next week for more quote-unquote intelligent discussion of happenings on Vashon and around the world.